This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Tuesday afternoon, June 11th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Thanks, Anne. We'll check in with you at 12:23. There are numerous pros and cons when it comes to taking a trip to a place you've been before. We'll discuss them in our next segment. But right now, the cost of owning a home goes well beyond the monthly mortgage payment. Let's talk about some of those hidden factors with Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, thank you for joining us today. And I'm sure every first-time homeowner has that story. The first time something went wrong, the first time you realized you had to make a substantial and expensive repair, and you say to yourself, boy, it was so much easier living in an apartment.
Amen. Thanks for having me again, Rob. That is absolutely the truth. These first-time home buyers, I mean, that's the learning experience, right? That's those of us that are seasoned homeowners that have had a couple homes and been privileged to do that, we know what to expect. But some of these younger folks coming into the marketplace, they unfortunately drain their savings on the down payment, and they don't have any money in reserve for, when things break.
Now, this Bankrate survey says the hidden costs of home ownership can add up to about $18,000 a year or $1,500 a month. And when we talk about some of the hidden costs of home ownership, are we talking about major repairs that crop up every now and then, or is it just little things that add up over time?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, you certainly, you don't know when things are going to break down. I mean, you've got the big items like your roof, and those are going to last 30 years. So depending on the age of the house, that'll tell you, maybe when you're in need for a roof. But then you've got your mechanicals, you've got your HVAC, and that's an issue, only goes down when it's, 95 degrees outside. So it's the times that we don't prepare is when these things type to happen. But typically, it is a combination of things that happen over time, as well as those big expenditures.
We're talking about the hidden costs of home ownership with Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago. One way you can avoid running into a major repair issue from the very beginning is going ahead with the home inspection. And as I recall, when we had the home inspection, I thought, everybody has to do this, right? But it's kind of surprising that quite a few homeowners waive the home inspection before they actually sign on the dotted line.
Very true. That was what a lot of folks have been using to get a leg up, to leverage the opportunities with this market that we have right now to make your offer more attractive to the seller than somebody else's, because you're not going to go through the process and potentially find some of these issues that we're talking about and have to, ask for a credit or go back to them to say that you want it repaired before you guys buy the home. So people were waiving this, and certainly not an idea that I would certainly recommend.
And then is this a problem that's more prevalent in older homes or in new construction? Because I would imagine new construction has its share of issues as well.
Yeah, new construction certainly does, but certainly the older homes are going to really be the ones that you're going to see these issues in, just because of that. The new construction, you're going to have little things like the drywall cracking and settling, and maybe switches not working. So those will be minor repairs, and mostly those are going to be covered because you've got a warranty for a year after you build that house. Whereas the old home, and that's the other option, you can ask for a warranty on that home when you buy it, no matter the age of it. So that's certainly something to consider as well.
Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up on this Travel Tuesday, do you hit repeat for your next vacation or try something new?
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. There's something to be said about the benefits of a repeat vacation, but there are also some solid arguments to try something else. We welcome in Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Glendale, Arizona. The website, travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And this calls to mind a conversation my wife and I have all the time, and that is, what would you do if you had all the money in the world? And my first thought would be to get a lake house somewhere on Lake Michigan in southwest Michigan. And my wife's idea is always go anywhere in the world. She likes the idea of visiting new places and experiencing new cities. But there's something to be said about the familiarity of one vacation spot with one ice cream spot and one restaurant you always have to go to.
I agree. I think it can definitely be debated on whether returning to that same destination creates that nostalgia that you look for in your family memories versus going to new places where you're exploring and discovering new things.
And then when it comes to going to that one place, let's say every summer or every 2 years or just periodically, what are some of the pros of doing the repeat vacation?
Well, the repeat vacations allows you to maybe draw back from past experiences. So when families disconnect or they're busy and they go back to these places that are tried and true, even for adults as well as teenagers, going back to those earliest child memories, and if we can combine that with our vacations, it's really hard to compete with that. But one of the things that we have noticed, and we've experienced this post-pandemic, is that a lot of people bought second homes during the pandemic, and then they really, really struggled to use those second homes, even though they wanted to return. And then in those same conversations, when they debated on whether or not having this place that they returned to over and over again, that it really did, you know, create some monotony going back to the same place, especially if you're making, you know, an investment where you're creating a second home. And when it comes to traveling, one of the ways to kind of create the best of both worlds, if you're looking to explore new destinations, is to try to recreate some of the memories that make going back to the same place so enjoyable.
We're talking about repeat vacations with Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, the website travelbta.com. Now, there are a lot of people who are listening who are in the Disney Vacation Club. They are repeat Walt Disney World people. They go once a year. They go twice a year. They have a resort they like. Does that fall into the repeat vacation bucket just because so much is going on at Disney World and so much is changing? There's a little bit of familiarity. At the same time, though, there's something new to await you on every trip.
Yes. And Disney, like, I would agree with you, it is a destination in and of itself. And you also have different ways to explore Disney. You can cruise Disney, you've got Paris Disney, you've got theme parks in LA, you've got theme parks in Florida. And where you choose to stay might create a different experience. We have people who go to Disney and they want to rent a villa, and then they arrive to and from via a rental car. And other times people want to be as close to the park as possible. But I also think that sometimes that minimizes the opportunities that you can provide your children in terms of the experiences of travel. So for those people that love Disney, a lot of times I encourage them to try destinations where you can almost create your own theme park. The Ozarks, Portugal, really has a lot of ways to explore nature. I would argue that Costa Rica, Hawaii are other great destinations where you can really create that theme park in nature. So giving your kids the opportunity to explore outside of, you know, sort of a created fantasy, maybe creating that in nature is a great way to kind of break up, but still share and create some of the same reasons why those families who really enjoy Disney can explore other destinations and enjoy those new destinations and experiences, maybe even more.
Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com. Thank you for joining us on this Travel Tuesday. Coming up next, avoiding the potential pitfalls of mixing investing and politics.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
There's usually movement in the markets in the aftermath of an election, but if you think your strategy should be tied to the party that wins, you may want to reconsider. Let's get the perspective of Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And we are entering the season in which a lot of people are arguing on social media or maybe even in person about what the presidential election will mean for the economy. And they'll talk about how the movement in the stock market is tied to something happening in the campaign season. But it sounds like historically, the markets aren't necessarily moved by one particular party in the White House, and you shouldn't structure your investments around it.
I think that's right. There's a couple ways of attacking this issue. One is just looking at the numbers, which I'll do in a minute, and the other is to focus on the lack of objectivity. That even if there were a particular correlation in the market between a political party, political point of view, and which stocks do well, it turns out that almost all of the time a Democrat looks at the market and sees something different than when a Republican does, and neither one of them is necessarily correct. So let's look at the numbers. It turns out that if you go back through history, the stock market has done, on average, somewhat better under Democratic presidents than Republican presidents. That's a statistic that often gets repeated. What is often less repeated is that inflation is higher in Democratic presidencies, on average, than in Republican presidency. So if you look at the stock market in inflation-adjusted terms, which is probably a better measure anyway, it turns out that the returns are relatively similar and not enough to satisfy a statistician that there's a statistically significant difference. But I think the more important thing is just the lack of objectivity. It turns out that lots of psychological research has found that when Democrats look at a Republican presidency, they say, boy, the economy is going to go to hell in a handbasket. And it's just the vice versa among Republicans when a Democrat's president. And that both of them, of course, can't be both correct.
It always reminds me of the quote that was said about the Wall Street Journal, especially its editorial page, which is very conservative. And you may agree with it if you are a conservative, but the editorial page and the news page and the analysis divide was always the editorial page tells you what you want to hear, and the news and analysis tell you what you need to hear, especially to move your money around.
Well, that's right. And I think some of the best advice I've seen in this regard is that you should find somebody you disagree with vehemently on political grounds and then have conversations with that person about your investment ideas. And it turns out it's a great way of getting somewhere to an objectivity middle ground, if I can put it that way, because as I said earlier, Republicans and Democrats will look at the same set of facts and draw diametrically different conclusions, and both can't be right. So it's going to be hard to do. Most of us don't like to talk to people we disagree with so vehemently, but it turns out it's not bad investment advice.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead on this Travel Tuesday, keeping your home safe when you're away on a trip.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Hunter Biden is convicted of three felony charges at his trial in Delaware. A special report coming up from CBS News. It's Travel Tuesday. We'll cover strategies to keep your home secure when you're away on vacation. And Starbucks is making a foray into the value menu wars. WBBM Business. The markets are mixed right now. The Dow is up 260. I should say the Dow is down. It's down 260 points. The NASDAQ is up 35. S&P 500 down 11. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, sunshine mixing with clouds, becoming warmer, a high of 77. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy with a shower in spots and a low of 63. Going up to 88 tomorrow. Right now, we have 72 at O'Hare, 73 at Midway, 64 at the lakefront at 1231.
CBS News Special Report. Hunter Biden faces possible prison time when he's sentenced later this year following his federal conviction today. CBS's Scott McFarland's outside court in Delaware.
The three charges all involved a gun he bought in October 2018. A gun the feds say he bought knowing he was a drug user, knowing he was addicted to drugs and therefore illegally.
Legal analyst Jessica Levinson.
Nobody should expect, I think, to see Hunter Biden behind bars for a quarter century. I think something closer to 1 to 2 years is absolutely within the realm of possibility. And I think some prison time is more likely than not.
CBS's Linda Kenyon now with reaction from President Biden.
I will accept the outcome of this case and will continue to respect the judicial process as Hunter considers an appeal.
Hunter himself has said he's more grateful for love and support he's getting than disappointed by this guilty verdict. CBS News Special Report. I'm Monica Ricks.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed. Let's focus on the markets with Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial based in Chicago. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. The Fed policy meeting is starting today. It'll wrap up tomorrow with a news conference from Fed Chair Jerome Powell. And even though no action is likely to be taken on interest rates, chances are it would have been tipped by now. There's still quite a bit for investors to fret over between now and tomorrow afternoon.
And that's right, Rob. And in the bigger picture, we just had new all-time highs in the S&P 500 and NASDAQ 100. But you're absolutely right that we do have a little bit of anxiety in the marketplace today. You're seeing a little bit of selling pressure, but nothing to worry about, in my opinion. With the VIX only at 13, it seems like we're going to get some insight of the Fed's interest rate path. But remember, that interest rate path, we were anticipating six cuts this year in 2024. We're down to one, and possibly may not get zero because the CPI data, the Consumer Price Index, which is one of the inflationary data points that the Fed really likes to look at, they have to get closer to their target 2% before they initiate this interest rate cutting. But interest rates are really driving the boat.
I want to ask you a question about the wisdom of crowds, and that is this idea that we're going to have, that people were predicting six interest rate cuts going into 2024, especially after it looked like we had turned the corner substantially on inflation last December. And that was, I'm sure you saw the six interest rate cut prediction. I saw that, and I'm just a guy. And I said, that doesn't seem right. That seems a little too ambitious. And yet people did place some bets on the idea of there being six rate cuts this year. So when it comes to setting up expectations, are we just disappointing ourselves?
That's a great point. And yes, common sense has to come into your investing playbook. And I think when you saw six interest rate cuts, that just did not seem plausible. And as we've seen inflationary data, which has been a windy road, we did see an uptick of inflation. I think all of us consumers, we still feel the inflation. So I know we get excited that inflation is going from 9 down to 4, down to 3, down to 2. But look where we are pre-COVID. We're paying 20% more for everything. So that is really a sticking point, I think, in the U.S. economy, which is sometimes dislocating the stock market, because you've seen the stock market find a way to overcome or step over the hurdle of not receiving those interest rate cuts, which are bullish. And you're seeing the stock market up about 26% from last November, led by NVIDIA, which was a stock tip we talked about back in January. I'm actually trimming some profits and get a little more defensive as I think we're at the higher end of the range here. There's more emotion, but right now, Rob, it's been a one-way parabolic move. So I think it makes sense for the stock market to take a little bit of a breather, back and fill, come back about 5%.
We're talking about today's market activity with Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO, KKM Financial in Chicago. Another thing that is definitely going to move markets this week are the CPI and PPI reports. And even though the price of gas is certainly going down, what are the expectations for month over month and year over year inflation this week?
Well, after three months in a row of better than expected or hotter than expected CPI data, I think we're looking for an inline consensus of, you know, the market having the ability to give the Fed some excuse. The Fed really seems like they want to cut interest rates, badly cut interest rates prior to the election in November. But right here, right now, Rob, they don't have the data points. And I think the Fed just saw the ECB, the European Central Bank, cut interest rates. And that could have been a mistake because they don't have inflation down the level they want across the seas. So all these central bankers, it's like a big mafia. They're in a little bit of collusion, kind of hits home in Chicago, that they're going to try and do it in a coordinated effort. But right here, right now, I think they have to be considered, because if they cut interest rates, that could fuel a leg higher in the stock markets, which is kind of misled, in my opinion. I think the economy is doing well. I don't expect earnings. You've seen Apple finally revive today, up about 6%. But I don't think this straight move up makes sense. So I think we're going to see more volatility, which we haven't really seen in the last couple months.
Now, with Apple, it seems like it's getting rewarded because at the developers conference, someone walked out and merely said AI. And that's all they had to do. Someone in a black turtleneck just had to say AI, and the street would have said, all right, they're addressing AI.
Yes, and it's interesting because they talk about the AI upgrade cycle, and now they're enhancing their AI with ChatGPT. OpenAI is the system they're going to be implementing. Now, one investor, who's kind of a big investor, kind of a rich guy, Elon Musk, he absolutely slammed Apple for trying to incorporate OpenAI / ChatGPT into their phone system. He even went as far, Rob, to say that he's going to lock all Apple devices up in a cage at all of his companies. He's not going to allow any of his employees to own them because of the privacy issues associated with OpenAI, thinking that Apple is selling your information down the river. He doesn't feel good about it. So there's mixed reviews, despite the fact, yes, the stock is above $200 for the first time ever. It's up about 6%, and you are seeing a little bit of rejuvenation, which has been a laggard all year. Apple has not been the NVIDIA, has not been the Facebook. It has really been a situation where people have been, kind of oy vey about what's going on. And here we are now seeing Apple come back. But I don't think the jury, like Hunter Biden, I don't think the jury is in fully on where Apple's price is going to be.
Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO, KKM Financial in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. One way to enjoy a trip more is to have peace of mind when it comes to the security of the home you've left behind. Let's get some tips from Mark Walters, Walters World Travel and Culture. Find him on YouTube. He's also a teaching associate professor of the Business Administration at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business in Urbana-Champaign. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And the biggest area of paranoia I have, Mark, when I travel is, did I close the garage door? And it is gone to such heights that one time we were taking off from Midway Airport, and fortunately the flight path went over my house, and I was able to look down, and I thought, oh good, the garage door is closed, and I then went off to Baltimore knowing that the house was secure. But I'm clearly not alone in this.
No, you are not. And there are some things you can do, and technology is fantastic. You know, now you can actually have it. So on your phone, there's an app that can open and close your garage door. It lets you know how long it's been open, if it was you that did it or the neighbor that was dropping off your mail. So there's technology that can help you keep your house safe, whether it is, you know, alarm system or the cameras, simple things like that. But there's also some really basic things you can do to really save yourself in case things do go bad. And one of the simplest things is, before you leave, make sure you turn off the water to your laundry. Because that, if the water breaks on that one, you're going to have a big problem.
Yeah, of the things we're going to talk about here, I mean, there's safety and security issues. Holding your mail and newspapers, I mean, there's probably no greater tip-off to someone who wants to break into your home than a pile of Chicago Tribunes on your front stoop. Making sure your lights are on timers. And this is a big one. Don't advertise on social media that you're traveling, which really flies in the face of conventional wisdom. You want to say, I'm at the airport, I'm on the bus, I'm going to Disney World, and you may not think that somebody is actually casing you while you're posting.
Yeah, and that's one of the things people need to realize is, even for me as a travel vlogger that travels the world all the time, I never post about where I'm actually traveling at the time, so people never really know. If you're letting people know, oh, 3 minutes until we depart, oh, we're in the air, you're really advertising to a lot of people, and depending how your settings are on your Instagram or your Facebook or TikTok or whatever, people can see that, and they can use that to their advantage. But also, I think there's another thing we need to mention with those lights on the timers. Also, when you set your timers, make sure you're doing it before you leave, so your house, the lights are going on and off while you live there too, so it doesn't look like all of a sudden, why is John's house going on the lights at this time? And if you have timers, they actually will randomize when your light goes on. So it's not always at 10 p.m. It goes on at 9:50. And then the next day it's 9:37. So it makes it a lot more looking like people are living there than just automatic lights turning off and on.
In this era of Ring doorbell cameras or cameras around your home or a Nest system that allows you to control the thermostat or your lights remotely, how does that change the equation when it comes to keeping your home safe while you're away?
Well, it does make it a lot easier for you to monitor things. So if you are worried, like, hey, you know, did a package get dropped off, or you can have it so you can actually open your garage door so the, you know, Amazon delivery person can put it in your garage versus having it sitting outside for someone to snag it later. These kind of things can really make it a lot easier, at least give you more comfort. But one of the things you have to realize is, if people are going to break into your house, they're going to break into your house. So you want to make it as least obvious as possible that you are not there. So that's where we're starting to think about some certain things.
And then what's the balancing act between getting a house sitter, someone to actually like live in your home while you're away, versus just calling a neighbor and having them keep an eye on your house and maybe water your plants while you're gone?
So if you have pets, house sitters are probably the best way to go because they're staying there. They're taking the pets out. They're managing them. And then there's somebody living there. The trusted neighbor, the problem is you got to find a trusted neighbor. And sometimes your neighbors you trust aren't the ones next door. But it's good to have at least somebody watching your house. I know for us, we usually we have a lot of cousins that are college age and they go to school around here. So I'm like, hey, you want to not live with your parents in the summer? Come stay at our house, and that kind of helps incentivize them to come. But there are services actually out there that will help you find a house sitter for your house if you want someone to be there.
Mark Walters, Walters World Travel and Culture. Find him on YouTube. Also a teaching associate professor of business administration at the U of I Yeast College of Business in Urbana-Champaign. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, Starbucks looks to bring cash-strapped customers back into its stores. It's
the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Starbucks is rolling out a new pairings menu in an effort to draw in customers. Let's get the details from RJ Hadevi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI in Chicago. RJ, thank you for joining us today. And the last time we talked about Starbucks, they had a rather disappointing first quarter report talking about the fact that a lot of people, as they try to keep up with rising prices, are just electing to maybe skip that morning Starbucks run and make coffee at home. So it seems like this is Starbucks' way of meeting that head on.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Rob. And we've seen a definite movement in the quick service restaurant, really the broader restaurant category in general, towards value. Consumers have been stretched by inflation over many years, generally speaking, 30% price hikes from where we were just a couple of years ago. And as a result, we're seeing some real effective promotional strategies on the value side. We've seen it with a couple of the casual dining chains like a Chili's and Buffalo Wild Wings. We're seeing it across the QSR space at Burger King. And really, this is just Starbucks' way to keep up with that, too, and really kind of capture that consumer affinity for value right now.
Zooming out in the quick service restaurant space, it seemed like for the longest time that breakfast was the most competitive battlefield between the major chains, and that's where all the innovation was happening. And then you're different people in different places were coming out with different drinks and different pricing structures. Is this still the case?
Yeah, we're still seeing a lot of innovation around the breakfast day part, but the timing has shifted a bit. We're still seeing, you know, return to office. We're still only about 70% of where we were pre-pandemic. So a lot of people still working from home. But what we've seen is that day part shift a little bit later in the morning. So kind of between the 9 and 11 o'clock day part time frame. And I think we're still seeing some innovation there. I mean, Starbucks is certainly coming up new drinks, and a lot of the other competitors in the space are doing the same. So I do think that it's still a battleground. It's still, generally speaking, breakfast products, both coffee and, you know, egg-based products are higher margin than a lot of the other things on the menu. So I think it's going to continue to be an area of innovation, but just different times people coming in.
And the offer right now for $5, a customer can order a tall iced or hot coffee and pair that with a croissant. The second one, $6, includes a drink plus a breakfast sandwich. Now, Starbucks is also in an interesting space because not only are they competing, and this is an all-day offer, by the way, but not only are they competing with the traditional fast food chains, the McDonald's and Burger Kings of the world, it seems like they're also competing with the Paneras of the world, which also has its own pick two offer.
Yeah, I think right now these value platforms are really table stakes for a lot of the restaurant companies, and it's cross, you're right, it's cross quick service, it's cross fast casual, across all the other coffee chains as well. It really is I think something we're going to see more and more of this summer. You know, particularly as McDonald's gets nearer towards its value menu platform, $5 lunch menu platform. So I think it's going to continue to be the theme we see across the board here.
RJ Hadevi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's show, you can just go to our stream and skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.